I looked out of the hallway and a troop of people was walking by my room. And there were grandparents and mothers and fathers and babies in arms. And basically what it was an entire extended family of one student. And they're all going to the conference. So I followed them down the hallway and watched them go in the room. And they sat down, and it was a Hmong family that was recent immigrants. And only their girls spoke English. The rest of the family did not speak English. And they were there for the parent-teacher conference, except it was the family-teacher conference. And you should have seen the look on the teacher's face when this extended family walked into the room. So I eavesdropped through the whole thing. And the girl was translating for everybody. She would ask the questions, you know, that she was directed to by her parents and grandparents. And there were many comments like, the conference started with the parents saying, "Thank you for being our daughter's teacher. She's a better person because you are her teacher." And as soon as she said that, the teacher's expression was just kind of blown away. That's something you don't hear very often as a teacher. And this conference went on for about a half an hour, and it was beautiful to watch the interaction. It took forever because of the translation that was involved, but talk about support for a child and advocacy for that child. That's something that I've never forgotten, and it wasn't my student. And I guarantee you that's something that teacher has never forgotten as well. Now, I'm not suggesting you go round up your parents and, you know, get the whole thing and go in. But I guess I want my emphasis today to be on positive things that can be done. You don't always get positive responses from the educational system. But for me as a teacher and for the other teachers I work with, we have people in our face all day long, namely 7th and 8th and 9th graders or whatever grade you teach. And when a parent comes to me with a concern about their child, first of all, I'm thankful to talk to an adult. I like talking to adults after dealing with kids all day. And secondly, when they're really it starts pleasantly, even when there's a problem, they get me on their side, okay, right away. And my goal as a teacher is to be on their side and have them on my side as well. I'm a real believer in partnerships between teachers and parents. Most of the teachers I work with, not all, I mean there are exceptions to this, are advocates of kids and want to do the best they can for the kids. And I believe parents, you know, want the same as well. But I also believe that you folks are the best advocate for your child. Not me, not anybody else, you are as a parent. And the sad thing about it, in education, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. I've gone to bat for kids before that have had one child last year in particular that had the most wonderful parents. And they were in the district. They worked, she was a healthcare person in one of the buildings. But very quiet, didn't want to make any waves. The problems her son was having had to do with depression and he was withdrawn. She didn't want to rattle the establishment and all. I kept telling her, we've got to make a stand here. This boy needs some help that I can't give him as a teacher. And I kind of took him and her under my wing and I said, we're gonna get help for this guy somehow. And she started digging in as a parent. I did as a teacher for this one child. And we had a real successful year. And to cap it off, I got the nicest note I've ever gotten from a parent at the end of the year. And if you think I'm gonna bend over backwards for this kid again, you're right. It felt really good to see that happen. I can't do that for 150 students a year as a middle school teacher. But
and they don't need it.
No, many of them don't. So I was thinking today in our discussion, we maybe need to start with levels. There are different levels of advocacy that you can do for your child. And the most basic one, I believe, is communication with the teacher. Don't be afraid of teachers. I get many parents that are intimidated by teachers, and with good reason. Teachers can be intimidating. We do that. I mean, I intimidate seventh graders all day long to get, you know, for a purpose sometimes. And sometimes it's hard to shift gears. Yeah. And I should say much of my experience comes out of the middle school and high school level. It's different in elementary, I believe. But don't be afraid of the teacher. Find out the best way to communicate with them. Email is becoming a wonderful thing if our system in school would just stay up and be better. But when I get an email address for a parent and I have email, that's a simple thing to do. The first thing I suggest is get a student handbook if your school has one. It's got numbers in it of teachers, administrators, school board members, at least ours does in our building. It's got mission statements, discipline statements. Check that out. Ask around for that. It's a good resource to have if you are having problems in the schools. So I would get that. Then Meet the teachers every chance you get. The more you're in my face, the more I remember your child. Again, it's kind of sad. The squeaky wheel does get the grease. But when I know there's a parent there really pushing behind the kid, I feel more obligated for some reason. And I shouldn't, probably. I should treat all my kids equally. But when I'm dealing with Johnny here, and I know you're Johnny's dad, and we've met face to face, I had a parent come in once. We have an open house first week of school. And real nice guy, but joking around, he said to me, if my son ever acts up and you have to smack him, go ahead, I won't sue. And then everybody laughed, and I could tell there was a real bond between the father and the son. But I kind of remember, I never smacked a kid. I never had to. He's a wonderful young man. But just getting to know the father a little bit, I don't know, it makes me remember the kid a little more, and I tend to try to work harder for that child. So.
You know, Jim, I do the same thing with almost exactly the same joke sometimes. What I'm doing is saying to my kid, you need to know that your father's on the teacher's side in terms of discipline and this sort of thing.
Yes.
And my child's not, the son I'm thinking about, not the one who needs a lot of advocacy where I'm going to be over against the teacher. What I want to do is have the teacher meet over against my kid. So, and especially in terms of, because the kids know you can't discipline them very well. Mm-hmm. And I want my kid to know, he can as far as I'm concerned. And if he won't, I will. Mm-hmm. I think that has a lot to do with, that's a form of advocacy, in my opinion.
Yep.
For the teacher, in that instance.
Plus, I think, yes. Plus, what we are trying to instill in our kids, too, is you need to respect your teacher, mm-hmm. because you hear and see, sometimes at early age already, and then at middle school level, I mean, some of the disrespect towards the teacher, it's I mean, I can't believe it at times, and that's not good, mm-hmm. because it will, so I'm glad to hear that, because I personally on your side.
And for the majority of cases, you know, and that comes across real clear. And for the majority of parents that I have, when I call home with a discipline problem, you know, I don't go home and say, what are you going to do about this? This is so good. And oftentimes the parent want me to deal with it, and then they're supportive, and they'll try to do an at-home thing. There are a lot of cases, too, where I'll call a home, and the parent will say, yeah, we're having the same problems here at home, especially in adolescents. They're going wacko in school, and they're going wacko at home as well. So we try to come up with some team things we can do. But yeah, I think it's very much a three-pronged approach between the parent, the teacher, and the student. And when we have that there, man, it works great. It really works. Even when there's major problems, if we can get cooperation going between the three of us and communication so we know what's going on. One criticism I get more than any other in conferences is I never give homework. And that usually comes from the students with D's and F's, from their parents. Their parents say, oh, we never see any homework at home. And then I look through my list and it's, well, they didn't do this project, they didn't do that, you know, and they're getting an F right now. We get kids that raid the mail, get report cards out before they get home. We had one forge one last year. He came home with straight A's for his mid-quarter report. And parents never came into conferences because they thought everything's cruising. And then we knew, usually when we send home a mid-quarter report with all F's on it, we get phone calls. You know, we never got a phone call, so we called the parent and said, did you see the mid-quarter report by any chance? Oh, yes, beautiful, all A's, boy, he's doing a nice job. And I said, well, let me check with his other teachers and we'll call you back. Because I know I've given him an F, and he had straight F's across the board. And he's a nice kid. He wasn't a bad kid at all, but he was petrified bringing home that mid-quarter report. And a lot of good came out that he got caught. So communication. Teachers are a pain in the neck to get a hold of. In my building, we have three phone lines coming in. I had my little girl slam her little finger in a door at daycare, and her fingernail was half off. And my daycare provider held on to her for 45 minutes while she tried to get through to the school and couldn't get through to me. And I happened to find out about it, and the daycare is right behind the building, so I ran over and got her into the hospital. But it's hard to get a hold of teachers. If you can, just ask the teacher, what's the best way of getting a hold of you? It's usually, in my building, it's through a phone call. And I feel real obligated as a teacher to return phone calls. And I hope most teachers feel that way. Most of them that I work with do. Anyway, leave a message, especially with a time when it's good to get a hold of you. And I do try to call back. I make a lot of phone calls home in the evening if I can't get home during.
Just a question, because I have a little controversy, is that I have a few parents who say we have a school directory that the PTA brings out, and with important useful numbers, as well as whoever chooses to, putting in also the child's name and telephone number in the individual classes. I have some parents who say, I want the teacher's home phone number in there. Personally, I think that has to be up to the teacher. But some parents are very adamant about it. How do you feel? I mean, personally, I think, no, you just call the school and the teacher will get back to you. But you get some very pushy parents that come.
I found that through time, that's developed with us as we develop a relationship with the teacher. And when we've been in adversarial times, that isn't going to be forthcoming. Mm-hmm. But as we have worked through a very difficult time, we now have a very good working relationship. And there have been times, like just this summer, David is what they call ESY in our district, is extended school year. He doesn't need to take academics, but his need is for structure and for social contact. So he works as an aide in the ESY program rather than studying. And it was a situation where my uncle died, and this all happened over the weekend, 4th of July weekend, and all these plans were being made. And I really wanted to let somebody know. And I thought, well, the only one I know who has an answering machine is transportation, and they would relay the message on, but their recorder wasn't on. And so it wasn't until noon the next day, while I was already in Salt Lake City, that Art could get a hold of them and tell them what was going on and that David might be more volatile. Well, when he did, you know, the first thing, oh, we'll never let that happen again. Here's my home phone number. Call mm-hmm. me whenever you need to. But there has to be a relationship developed.
So how would you, as a teacher, how would you like, I mean, it's the beginning of the year, okay, you don't know the teacher, parents, but it's the start. Mm-hmm. The most appropriate thing would be just school number.
I put at the bottom, some teachers' phone numbers are available in the telephone book. Because, you know, if they want their numbers out there in the phone book, if not, a lot of teachers in our area have unlisted numbers. Mm-hmm. If they've got unlisted numbers, that's nobody's business. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what I say.
And yeah. Also always often send home, in the grade school, we'll send home their numbers at the beginning of the year in a parent newsletter.
That's true. So we should pretty much leave it up to the teacher, which is how the way I feel.
See, for me, with small kids at home, it's real hard to deal with phone calls for about 2 hours in the evening. And
well, you want your privacy, too.
Yeah.
It's a long day. That's the way I feel.
But the other side of that is I do feel very obligated to get back in touch with parents that have tried to contact me. That's why if I get a note in my box that a parent has called and I can't get through them during the school day, after the kids go down at night, I'll try again. I don't mind making phone calls from home when I know the kids are in bed, and you know,
That's your choice. But if they call mm-hmm. you at home in the middle of what I call stress time in the evenings, mm-hmm. I personally find it kind of inappropriate, mm-hmm. rude, actually.
And I have a hard time calling parents at work some days. I never know whether I'm disturbing them. It seems like during the day, it's you can only get parents at work. And so if I meet a parent and I know we need to contact each other, I try to ask them, is it okay if I call you at work? Just because I'm uncomfortable doing that. I'm not sure what the parent's doing for a living. And I, you know, maybe they're in a life or death conference removing somebody's kidney or something. I don't know. But I'm a little reluctant to do that. But I think just that
can establish a level, like I carry a cell phone so that David could reach me at any point, or the school could if they needed to call. Mm-hmm. And you know, you can set kind of a tone by saying, you know, here's my card and here's my cell phone number, and call anytime. Mm-hmm. You know, to make myself accessible.
And I've gotten beeper numbers from parents, you know, before too, that said just beep me anytime and I'll give you a call.
And we ended up with you know, a few teachers that say, well, I tried to call you, but I couldn't reach you. And I can look them straight in the eye and say, that's not possible because I have a recorder on 24 hours a day. And at that point, it was the only number we had. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, you can catch them mm-hmm. and say, you know, I'd have returned your call if I'd have gotten it. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. sometimes you have to, because there are bad teachers
oh, yeah.
out there
yeah.
who are trying to sneak around, too.
Mm-hmm. It's real interesting. I get concerned of that as a teacher. I keep a log of when I call. I mean, there's no proof that I've really called during that time, but I just keep my logbook with me, and I just jot down, you know, called, no answer, called, got machine, or something like that. Just that way, when a parent comes back at me 3 months later, you know, I can kind of go back and say, oh, yeah, I did forget to call you. I mean, I've done that before, too. I've lost messages, and you feel bad.
That's,
you know?
Perfect.
Yeah, I'll go to my box, and there'll be a stack of papers this big, and then I'll pull them out and put them on my desk and go, oh, no messages. And then I, 3 days later, as I'm going, you know, through the papers that I got photocopied, this message is stuck in, and it's kind of like, whoops.
Kind of bad. Along with the student handbook, though, something that I do is I keep laminated sheets in my purse at all times. Hmm. And I have all kind of things like family members, but one whole side is school stuff. And it, I mean, it's not handy to carry around the handbook all the time. And I have what our district office is, what the, you know, the address, the telephone number, the fax number. I have, you know, Michelle at the grade school, what all her teachers are, and the phone numbers and how you reach and who the school secretary's name is, because that's who you always talk to. And, you know, and it's real important to know and make friends with those people. And then,
amen.
And then, you know, to introduce yourself and to find out their name and say, you know, hi, Sally, this is Denny, and, you know, I can make it work for you. And then David, with all of his people, I have all of his teachers, which is a huge list. And in addition to the school people on my list, I also keep, you know, the district people, I keep the counselors we've worked for, I keep the ARC number on here, the COPE number, which is an advocacy group. I have a contact at the State Department of Education. I keep his phone number with me at all times. as well as all of our doctors and the people that we've seen at different times for different reasons, even if we're not still currently seeing them, because sometimes there's an expertise. You know, David was tested up at the Children Development Center at our hospital, HSU. And I keep all those people's names on here in case I have to call one of them one time. And I keep our attorney's number on here. But that way, if something happens and I'm out and the school calls me on the cell phone, I have these numbers. I don't have to race home. Mm-hmm. Art has these numbers at the office. We keep them in the glove compartment of all of our cars. And it has been invaluable just to have, you know, this is my personal list. Mm-hmm. And we had a parents group that started 2 years ago that's for special ed parents. We call it like a PTA, but it's really more of a forum. We'll have speakers in most often, but sometimes we just have roundtable discussions. And our victory this year, our district is so close, was to have a sheet that we could give new parents and that they could give other parents that was just a blank. You know, my child's teacher's name is, you know, and all, listing all these things, including what took me about 4 years to find out, the structure of the special ed department at the district office. They do not want that information out there. Mm. And it took a miracle of diplomacy to let us list that. And then they went ahead and actually allowed us to put all the school board people on there. Mm. And, you know, because PTAs have a lot of boundaries to work within, mm-hmm. too. But how helpful that has been to new people, mm-hmm. to say, oh, yeah, I know he's getting speech, but I don't have a clue who that teacher is and how to get a hold of him, because those are itinerant teachers. They're not in the building.
Right.
And has it been, this has a quote, hindrance or help to be an official support group? But it sounds like since you're an official support group under the school, they said you can't do this, you don't give up that information.
Well, I belong to any number of groups.
Yeah. I mean, 'cause it's not
but
like,
this is a group that's more a forum, and we do talk to each other a lot and work out problems and share ideas, but we also have speakers in. And our purpose is education. Our purpose is not, you know, gift school.
Yeah.
Our school district is just real head in the sand kind of thing. I don't understand. If I understand, that's changed. as superintendents change through the years. It's kind of a top-down kind of thing in our district. But as well as having meetings, you know, for information, like we've had a series of meetings on transition process for older kids. We've also had people who have brought us up to date on what the legislation is. Of course, teachers might not consider that as a supportive thing either, but, you know, for those of us who want to support IDEA and write letters and say, you know, yes, we've got to keep this in place, you know, that our children should be guaranteed an education, you know, that it's just kind of an additional thing to the PTA in our school, because for some of us, you know, raising money to buy computer programs is great, but for other people, that isn't enough. Hmm. And to find information is, especially at the beginning when you haven't networked and you don't know where to go, mm-hmm. it's really nice to have other parents who've been there who can say, you know, yes, this is a good, nice way to start out, but, you know, if you run into trouble, I mean, we've had good teachers and bad teachers. And David in his early years was on and off IEPs different times.
What's an IEP?
That's the individual education plan. That's the IDEA guarantees you a chance that your child will be educated in the appropriate way.
In special ed.
And there are categories under that law that you have different, you know, kinds of disabilities that are recognized as being guaranteed under that law. But
my question was, talking about the levels of advocacy, you know, mm-hmm. And I think of two things. One is the type of child you're advocating for. You and I've got a special needs child, so that's a certain set of bringing the IEPs and that sort of stuff. You've got gifted children, that's another set of advocacy. You've got just a child, you know, maybe any or all those things, mm-hmm. but just want good classroom environments, that's another level of advocacy. And what I hear you saying is, the first assumption ought to be that these people aren't your enemies. You know,
exactly.
Come talk to your teachers mm-hmm. and I agree. Mm-hmm. But when I start, and it's been a special needs child that's gotten me started to think about this seriously, when I start thinking of being an advocate for my child, I say if I'm going to be a good advocate, I've got to assume that the job is mine to get the information and to be prepared, and that if they're going to work with me, that's wonderful. But if I'm going to be effective, I'm going to assume that maybe they're not. So the level is, they're all there for you, and it's a wonderful process. Number two is they're just ignorant, head in the sand, and they just aren't quite with the program, which is where my school district is with. They don't even know what my child has, nobody has heard of it. So we get to educate them about mm-hmm. that. The third level is outright resistance. You, with your list and stuff, the preparation is the same for whatever level you deal with.
Absolutely.
Have the list, have the numbers,
absolutely,
whatever.
Absolutely it is.
I don't have to call my attorney, I don't have to call the superintendent, that's great. but I don't know what I'm saying, except that to be an advocate, my feeling is to be an advocate for my child is to assume that you're going to not always get cooperation or not always going to get understanding, and I tend to roll over easy. Mm-hmm. God, Jim, you've got 150 kids. God, no wonder you can't keep track of my kids, you know? Mm-hmm. And people like Denny say, that's nice of you to feel that mm-hmm. way, but that's not advocacy.
Right.
Advocacy is 150 kids is your problem. This yep. child is my problem. You better know what's going on with my child. You know?
I get
absolutely. And yep. at the same time, along with that, not to just make your job harder.
It's been reading my notes.
Know, what I can say is, you know, if 150 kids is too much, if you had 120, like our junior high jumped a huge amount mm-hmm. in 1 year. You know, if you had 120 last year and you thought that was manageable, what can I do with you, for you, at the administrative level, at the state level, to say, I mean, I see it has to be a whole-rounded thing. Yeah, 150
oh, yeah.
kids. So I come at it, you know, from both directions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but you're darn right. When I go into a meeting with you, I go in for my child.
Yep.
And I am ever hopeful that whatever I can teach you about, you know, because some of David's conditions didn't have a lot of information. Mm-hmm. If I can pass things on, if I can tell you what's worked for us, if I can bring you articles and send you people, every year we would offer to have our social worker come in and deal with David's team of teachers. teachers. Mm-hmm. We've always requested that his teachers be assigned in the spring, mm-hmm. so that they would have time to do their homework on him, because it wasn't, you know, like Down syndrome or something that was well known and teachers might have seen it before, or a lot of literature, that kind of thing. But if they wanted to take time over the summer, and several wonderful teachers said, you know, that's our job, you know, mm-hmm. we will do that because mm-hmm. we want to be prepared in the fall. Only one year did they ever let our social worker come in and talk to mm-hmm. them. But it was easier for us to offer her than ourselves, because although I've done a lot of reading, and Antonia always tells me, you know, as much as I do, at least enough of the beginning stuff, not always the most current research, but enough of the stuff mm-hmm. that teachers could use. But we found a lot of times teachers have their professional pride and they don't want to hear it from the parent. Mm-hmm. But if they could hear it from the social worker, then that's a different level of relationship.
Yeah, see, that's counter to what I believe. And when a parent comes to me, they know their kids. I don't know their kids. They, you know, they've lived with them for 13 years before I've got them. And if there's a syndrome I haven't heard of, I more than gladly take information, because the one you're referring to, I haven't. I've never had a student that I've known anyway, you know, that's had that. And I get at least 20 to 30 parents a year apologizing to me for making demands of me. And they're not demands. You know, demand is, can I get a phone call if my child's still flunking in 2 weeks? I'm sorry to bother you with that, you know. They don't have to. I keep telling them, you're your kid's advocate. Demand of me what you want. Tell me what you want, and I'll try to meet those needs. When they're not being met, then I think there is a hierarchy to start going through. You're absolutely correct. Administrators and counselors, in particular, I think are places to go. I get a lot of kids with depression, non-academic problems that affect their classroom that I don't have the expertise to handle or the time. I encourage parents, stop in. If you've got a wonderful child who's getting straight A's and is gifted, still stop in and see the principal. You should be advocating perhaps for your gifted program in the building. Get in their face and get to know them a little bit. At least in my building, the principals, to me, that's their job, is to deal with parents. And especially if there's a problem between the parent and the teacher, the principal, that's their job, is to step in and try to smooth over those problems. You can keep going beyond that to the school board and superintendent. Those are elected folks. We're all public officials. These are public institutions, and we're here to meet the parents' needs, as far as I'm concerned. And I think the parents have the right to demand of their schools, you know, the best for their child and to be their advocate. I keep saying the squeaky wheel gets the grease, but I see it all the time when we have strong parent advocates.
It's true, and that's my biblical model for advocacy, is in Luke 11, there's the story about the guy who has company come in the middle of the night and he has no food, and he goes next door to his neighbor, and the guy says, hey, we're all in bed, you know, I don't want to get up and take care of you now. You know, leave me alone. And yet there's that verse in there that says, and yet not because he's your friend, but because you are persistent, he will get up and take care of you. Mm-hmm. And that's where I come from, that if things can't be handled easily, you know, if it's not being done right, and mm-hmm. there are times with my regular daughter that things aren't really to my satisfaction, that things are going on that really shouldn't be done. Mm-hmm. You know, then you go in and you ask, and if they say, you know, well, you know, we really can't do that, then you can say why, mm-hmm. and not just take them at their word and mm-hmm. say, we really can't do it. Well, why can't you? Well, gosh, have you ever thought about, maybe they've thought of everything I've thought of, maybe they haven't. But to be in there, and if it gets beyond, and if there is a problem, if it becomes very apparent early on, I keep a notebook by every phone. I write down who I call, when I call, what we said, a lot of times because I take shorthand verbatim exactly what was said, and type it out, keep good files, and write letters. Don't trust phone calls, mm-hmm. because sometimes it can be, I mean, I have a lot of allergies and I choke mm-hmm. a lot. Well, my tone of voice can be misrepresented as to what I'm really feeling. And if there's something touchy, sometimes I want to think it out. I'm not as good speaking on my feet as I am writing letters. Mm-hmm. But also then you have a record. You know, yes, I wrote, you know, And when I write letters, I don't write to him. I write to him and whoever, the counselor, the speech therapist, or the speech therapist if that's the problem, and then a carbon copy to you as the homeroom teacher, or the principal if it's an administrative issue. I never write a letter to one person. The more people I can send it to that appropriately, the better it is, because if it gets lost, if you never get your copy, your principal will come to you and say, Jim, did you get that letter? This lady is talking about, you know, what's going on?
Yeah, yeah.
And you're going, gosh, I never got that letter, or I hoped it would go away.
Whatever. You're the principal, you deal with it.
but there is a, you start the same, but then it depends on how it's handled, where the parent has to go.
And it depends on your child, too. You need, the bureaucracy of schools are confusing to not, and they're confusing to me, and I've been in the school for 10 years. I think I finally got the special ed system figured out last year, and then they changed rules on me. I mean, and that always happens as well. No matter what your child is, if they're special ed, not, that's why I put the teachers in special services on the board, because if you're not in special services, it's a lot different than if you are in special services. When you're in special services, you've got a ton of people that you're dealing with. If you're not in special services, you probably have less, which makes it a little easier. But I think even for those non-special services kids, it's important to get to know guidance counselors and principals in particular. If you're talented and gifted, we have one coordinator in our building. You should know her. You know, get at least talk to her. In our case, she's got a special phone number. You can get her phone number. An advocate for those kids. I think we have a strong program because we have strong parents in our district that have advocated for it.
I have, as a pastor and person who works with youth a lot, and when I'm needing just a point of access, can I just go into their guidance counselors, or who would I talk to if I know the kid's dealing with something, just to say, these are my kids, if you ever need some, you know, other rings of support?
In my building, it would be the guidance counselors. I always wonder how administration deals with a pastor coming into the public schools.
It depends on the school. That's how I've at least experienced it. Some are, you just don't really swap pastor to run, others are very welcoming because they say, anybody who's even close related to social services, please help us out.
Yeah, and that's my opinion. We need the churches to help. We need social service. We need everybody in the community to help, basically.
What's a guidance counselor? We have one at your school?
We have, in our building, I'm in a 6th through 8th building, we have one for each grade level. They're the people that help kids with, in high school, they help with scheduling programs. They might help with post high school things. In my building, in the 6th through 8th building, they help a lot with problems. When kids hit adolescence, things start exploding. There was a divorce in the family, they come out in 7th grade. You know, the kids start whacking out.
It's kind of like a social worker.
Yeah, yeah. We have support groups for...
employed by the school district.
Yes, they do a lot of one-on-one counseling and group stuff with the kids in our building. And they can. And we have a school psychologist that works with them, who's another person that when I was working with this young man with depression, he met with a psychologist quite a bit, and his mother had the psychologist's number and was in contact with him. They can do reference to outside programs that can help for any variety of, you know, needs that you have. And parents don't always want to stop and see them. Half the conferences I have, I say, go see the guidance counselor, because they can explain test scores really well, much better than I can. I look at the numbers, and I can usually figure it out, but it takes me about 10 minutes to kind of, you know, nothing seems to make sense with the test scores. And the counselors, they go, oh yeah, this means, you know, they do them every day. So they know
that little piece of paper you get is pretty cryptic. It doesn't give you much information to go on.
Yeah, and it's all, you know, little letter. I never remember what the letters stand for. And then the tests seem to change every couple years,
did
too.
Did you say you have 3 for each grade in your school?
No, one for each. We have 3 grades, one for each grade.
Yeah. That's still pretty good. That is a lot. Plus psychologists.
One for the district.
Because all the middle school teachers in my running group, they are just going bonkers these days. I'm from Oregon, and we're just getting a continuous amount of cuts. They only have half-time counselors that are spread between all the middle schools in Eugene.
Oh my.
They used to work like from, you know, 8 to 3, and now they're working 7 to, you know, 5 and 6 because the handling things that their counselors used to handle for them.
Hmm.
So I think the levels of help available is different.
And see, that's another time to be really good touch with your teacher, because I don't know, in middle school, I can't think of a good example because that was such a traumatic time for us. But for instance, in a grade school, yes, there are things that only teachers can handle, but you know, maybe you can be the one who sends in the weekly reader book report, you know, when the kids order the books, and that, you know, there's a lot of paperwork kind of things that parents can do that take.
Well, in Oregon, so much of what's going on in schools is done by parents.
I teach at college.
My teaching friends in K-12 are just going bonkers.
I think in Oregon, there's, I think, at the political level, I think parents
it's just
push
awful
to get the funds.
Didn't you say that one of the reasons why you had that many guidance counselors is the advocacy from the parents to support that?
I think so.
So parents aren't even supporting the schools economically through both.
Yeah, well, and that's very key too.
And there's so much, there's a lot of crap going on.
Yeah. It's everywhere. It's everywhere. I mean,
get a little bit of Washington too.
Ours has been politically traumatic the last 5 or 6 years because they went from local funding to state funding, and getting the problems and that and the equality and that worked out has been really hard. Mm-hmm. At the same time, people wanted to pay less taxes, and so you know, with all this.
Well, the logging industry gets a lot of subsidies, and then schools.
So it's not just taxpayer revolt, it's the switch of different kind of funding and getting a good kind of a formula worked out that works for people, you know. But that's where parents, you know, can enter in. And,
that's the other.
I mean, I've been down to Salem and demonstrated on the Capitol steps. It was pretty interesting because I was down there on Valentine's Day. And it happens, Valentine's Day happens to be our state birthday, which I didn't know. But they were having a big cake and the governor was coming, and I went into that part because it seemed to be where more important people were than out on the steps. They were all like me. And I went in and the governor turned around in front of me and I stuck out my hand and said, you know, this is who I am and this is why I'm here. You know, don't forget us. Mm-hmm. And he kind of looked at me, but, you know, it's like, you've got to get it out wherever it is.
You're a major squeak, Jenny.
You should try one for office.
You know, I thought every time that I would do that, I would have been scared to death. But it just happened. And I know my parents look at me. My dad's a lawyer, and my mom was the one who would never, you know, walk the halls of school. She was terrified. And they just look at me and go, wow, I can't believe it. But, you know, you learn the skills. My sister has a 15-year-old now, and he was assigned to a teacher that should have been kicked out a long time ago because she did her research and talked to people that were her age who had this guy in school, you know. And called me and said, what am I going to do? So I walked her through the steps, and every once in a while I'd think of something, and I would call her and I'd say, you know, don't use this word, do use that word, you know, that kind of thing. And she called me afterwards in tears, and she goes, I can't, because as I was coaching her, she would say, they wouldn't do that, they wouldn't do that, I can't believe it. And I'd go, well, wait and see, maybe your school district's better than ours. She called me in tears and she goes, I can't believe it. You had it pegged right down the line. And the techniques, no matter what the problem, I mean, she just had to have a kid moved into a different classroom. But the guy was the coach for the basketball team, and he was going to discriminate against her son, who was a star player, if he left the classroom, you know, and how do you work that out? An entirely different situation from what I work with, but the steps are the same. Mm-hmm. You know, and you just have to be persistent, and you have to think through. I mean, that's the hardest part, because you have this and you just get, you know, it can't be that way. But you have to get through that part and stop and think it through before you go in. You have to know what you want, and you have to know if it's reasonable. And I have a group of friends out here in all different kinds of jobs as well, who have kids of different ages, needs of different ages. Some of them are professional people. And I will call before there's a major thing that I'm going to go in and say, am I in reality here, or am I just way over the moon? Because it makes sense to me, but I know that I get sidetracked because I've got tunnel vision trying to get David what he needs. You know, you got to have reality checks. Yeah. You got to have people that you trust and that you will listen to that says, well, it's a little on the edge there.
And there are advocacy groups out there, especially in the special services areas. I've been in meetings where parents have brought in. There's a group in Minnesota called PACER. I'm not sure if that's...
It's probably like our COPE.
Yeah, and they will actually come in with you to conferences and that. We had one parent that was unhappy with the services we were giving her son, and I really did think we were bending over backwards we're trying, is my belief. And she brought PACER in. And actually, this woman's picture is in the paper about 2 days later, which was kind of interesting. But she confirmed to this woman that, yeah, we really, within the bounds of what we legally could do, we really, mm-hmm. she was pleased with what we were doing. So that was, as a teacher, that was nice to hear.
And what was in the paper 2 days later?
Well, she was, not about us, but this woman also was on the front page of the paper as an advocate for special ed students. So
mm-hmm. that was kind of fun. My question, in terms of just kind of general advocacy, if we're just sort of parents with regular kids doing regular school stuff, living regular lives, and we want to help make the system better, you know, improve it. It seems, well, I guess I'm asking, you know, there's a certain sense in which where I've done that, just kind of regular, you sort of get swallowed or sort of sidetracked or certain complaints about being on PTAs that don't do a lot or don't have as creative people as you do, and you sort of kind of get into pigeonholed, nothing really happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, or just because there is so much going on, you know. I mean, and you're doing your best for 150 kids, and the administration's doing their best, but nonetheless, it's kind of, you know. It seems to me that it's probably wrong thinking on my part to try to be nice about that. I mean, it's sort of like I need to be more serious as a parent to say they need help,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I may need to convince them that they need parent help, but they're not open to that. Because a lot of schools, my wife said, they would say that she volunteered and felt really sidetracked. Well, if you're a teacher, you got people volunteering, it's pretty hard to bring somebody in and adjust your schedule to lose this person functionally. That's sort of like a year-long commitment, you know, for half a day. I mean, I volunteered and they say, cut out these letters with scissors while they're doing the class. It's kind of like, well, I got better things to do in 2 hours than come and cut out letters with scissors in the back while the classroom's going on. If that's what you're going to use me, forget. But from the teacher's perspective, it's kind of like,
I mean, she'll have probably more time instead of cutting out that paper when school is out, she'll have more time than to prepare the lesson for next day. So indirectly, you are helping out.
Well, in which case, give me the letters and send them home, which has been done
that's
too.
True.
Say that,
that's
you know, send me someone will cut them out. And if that's the need, then that should be told that. You know, what you can do is take some of the SCUS work off of me so I can, you know.
Well, somebody the other night had the idea, that, and I'd never heard of this before, but having a parent volunteer coordinator in a school, I think, is a way to go.
We have one at the district level who organizes the ones in all the different schools, and it's a tremendous program.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of a competition in our district to see, you have, for liability reasons, you have to sign in. But then you write down what program you were working with and how many hours you were there that day. And it's a competition among the schools now, or the better schools anyway, I shouldn't say that, the middle class schools, to see who can get more parent volunteer hours, you mm-hmm. know. And there's a reward in that as well, because if you put in a certain number of hours, and I can't remember what it is, but you've got a 3-year period, and you know, which can restart at any 3-year segment, you can go and take the classes the teachers take for free. You can join the teachers' credit union. There are a few other things but like that, you know, where if you're doing it for a serious purpose and not, you know, just whatever, you know, that there are some benefits to it.
Mm-hmm.
Can I give a suggestion, because as you mentioned that, it gets me thinking too, what I could improve at my school too, but we have right now a big concern is discipline, where discipline has been handled at the school, and some parents want to see some more improvements, want to see a little bit more happening than what has been there. So they ask me, well, Robert, so they tell me, it's like, well, what should I do? And personally, I feel even as a parent, I mean, I would mention it to the PTA president, and maybe she, I mean, the more input I get, I say, you know, this one told me that, and this one has the same thing, and that one, you know, maybe we should organize something. But at the same time, I will go mention it to the teacher as well as to the principal. I wouldn't just rule the body, whether it's PTA or PTA or whatever.
I would at the same time also start making some noise at administration level. Mm-hmm. And after the other night's some of the comments that came out of the public, I realized too, and I sensed a few things in my school district, I realized too, well, maybe we should make a little more noise outside of the school too. But first, I mean, I would go the regular channel because I think attitude and also style. Mm-hmm. I think the more style we show the, I mean, if we get nasty right away, I don't think we'll get far. Mm-hmm. But you can still be polite, but still very effective.
You can be polite if they think they don't want to hear too.
Oh yeah.
And
yeah,
it's absolutely mandatory that you be polite. And it's not, I had a friend whose son was going through transition, and the school had this idea that Sam should drive, and Sam should get a driver's license, which was, you knew Sam, absolutely, totally out of the question. And she just stood up and said, we are not going to agree on this, and we are the parents, and this meeting is over until you can find out enough about Sam to realize that this is not even a topic of conversation. Mm-hmm. And walked out, because there isn't any point in getting into an argument with no end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that kind of brings you to something I want to get in before we quit here. At conferences and when you're dealing with kids, find a teacher who knows your child and see if the teacher knows your child. In elementary, you tend to be dealing with one or two teachers. In my building, you're dealing with six teachers. I will often, there are certain kids that you click with better than others, certain parents you click with better than others. I will often say, why don't I be the contact person with you from my group of teachers? We get along well. I think I've had a special relationship with your child. I will collect information from the other teachers and get back to you on it. And I become a contact for that teacher. So if you find a teacher you click with, you might ask them if they would do something like that on the secondary level. As secondary parents, don't give up on the kids. So many parents quit coming to conferences in junior high and high school. And I think it's critical to keep doing that. The kids don't want you to do it. They don't want you to know what's going on in school half the time. And they don't want direct, you know, you can't be in their face all the time. There are other things you can do, but you need to know what's going on with those kids. I had a phone call home to a mother this year, and I was convinced her child was using drugs. And we'd been having problems with this girl. She's bright, intelligent, great family, but she really got into some devil worship stuff on the side. And I called home and I said, she's either using drugs now or she's going to be using. Those are the two options, and we have to do something about her. She fits the profile across the board. And mom said, no, there's no way. She's doing drugs. And her mom has a master's in counseling, I think. Very intelligent woman. And she was totally in denial about the behaviors we were seeing in school. And she may not have been seeing them as much at home. And I said, something's wrong. And I rarely will argue with a parent about their child. I said, she's using. I know it. And if she's not, she's going to be. She's super at risk right now. Within a week, she's in the treatment program. She's using alcohol and marijuana, and she finished up the year in a drug treatment, as a residential drug treatment program.
So the parents did?
They finally did. They talked to me. They talked to the counselors. The counselors reiterated what I said. They wanted to get her checked for ADD and ADHD, and I said, no way. I said, you can do it, but I can tell you right now, it's not going to fly. And they finally went to an independent source and had her, whatever the process is.
And at that age, you can't just be in your classroom like you can with little kids who are cutting and pasting either, but it's real important for parents to stay involved at that level, you know, working in the library or working downstairs in the, you know, doing photocopies or collating tests or, you know, whatever it is, the school. And for the groups that the PTAs don't really get to do useful things, what worked in my sister's schools was you sign up if you want to volunteer, and you don't work in your child's classroom, but you do something in the school that somebody needs. If the teachers are feeling threatened, that way they don't feel like they're being spied on, you know, by their own parents, but they are doing useful things that help in the school. So it could be that kind of program could be suggested, that, you know, this is my name and these are my skills. You know, if all you can do is cut out paper letters, then the kindergarten teacher can probably use you. If you can tutor like I can,
you know, I spend my time in the resource room because I can do something that's very useful.
It's a neat way to tune in to what's going on.
And you get a whole different level.
I do that at my job. I enjoy that.
And as a teacher, when I see a parent I know in this building, I always say a comment about their child. You know, whether it's, boy, that's quite the kid you got there. Just did a wonderful job on something. I always try to keep the communication stuff going.
And another thing that's important about advocacy is both ways to complement each other. You know, when something good has happened, or even, you know, if you're having a terrible time, we had IEP meetings about every 3 weeks because that was the only way we could deal with it. Wasn't my favorite thing to do, but call whoever needs to be and deal with it that often. You know, I'm really glad you could be here this afternoon. We really need to work on this. To say, we don't agree yet, but I'm glad we're still here working on it. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, they worked real hard. They didn't always agree with us and vice versa. But at least you're working on it.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't jump to a lawsuit first thing.
Mm-hmm. I have a question relative to bringing in I think you were staff kind of was, but it relates to that. If you have a child with a discipline problem or something, if I'm lucky to have a child with you as a youth pastor for that child, or just a pastor, not a youth pastor, I think it's very hard for her to go to school and say, some of my kids go here, can I hang around? That's pretty tough. Can I, as a parent, say, you know, we've got a pastor church who cares about my son as well, you know, and I'd like to be involved with this. If I come to UJ as a teacher, you know, and we're trying to work out a problem with discipline or concern or whatever, can I bring my youth pastor in? Or as a parent, say, you know, this is a resource I'd like you to be aware of or to use, or if you've got a tough situation, you can't call me, you can call her. We get valuable youth pastors that do pizza parties and they go, all these other skills you could do.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have, I'm a pastor, and you have confirmation too, and you see these kids.
Yeah.
And not as much as school, but you also see them in a different context.
Can the schools respond to that because it's a religious person? That's my question.
I think that would depend on the district.
Yeah.
I would personally be open to that because I think community involvement is the key to raising successful youth.
The principal at our high school last year said to the pastors in town that he wanted them walking around the halls at lunchtime. He says, you know, you can't proselytize stuff like that. He said, but you folks are free, you know, relative, you've got some control of your time. If you want to be in the halls, I want you in the halls at the risk-benefit. Well, I guess that's, you know, his perspective as a principal, and there was no openness to that.
I suspect in some places you get resistance to that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, you definitely would. I'm just wondering if that's just an advocacy route it can be explored as a parent too.
I you betcha, and I would encourage parents to do that.
And if your school district is resistant to clergy, we had David's, not a pastor, but his Luther League sponsor at meetings. And she knew parts of him that I didn't because of the social realm with other kids that they were in. And if they're going to be resistant to a religious connotation to start with, introduce them as a friend. This is my friend Mary. She knows David and I'm holding her way on to. You know, I mean, it works that way. You know, sometime off the record, you can say, yes, this is what it is. But if it has to go on paper, you know, and they're going to get in trouble for it, don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
This is my friend. You can take whoever you want.
Sure.
And give the school as many resources as you can provide.
Mm-hmm. There are more and more security concerns in schools these days. So usually if you do that, like in our building, I will escort people to the office if they're in the hallways without a pat. Visitors have to wear a visitor thing.
Exactly.
So be sure you do that. I escorted the daughter of the teacher next to me out of the building once because two of us just kind of took her out of the office and, but my mom teaches it. Well, you have to have, you know.
Yeah.
We had a rape in the district next to us in the locker room, so. Where?
Yeah.
Centennial Public Schools in Circle Pines, Lexington, that area. Mm-hmm. I do know we've got some real strong churches in the area that are involved with the kids quite a bit. And our particular principal has been open to having. They've had a youth pastor in the lunchroom some days.
But they're not talking any religious...
Correct.
No, you're not going to proselytize. That's just like bad form.
Yeah.
But I mean, as a mentor or as an adult, I mean, you know, if you talk about Research Institute has the 40 assets of building healthy children, and one is knowing an adult outside your family, and that can be a teacher, it can be a pastor, that can be any, a friend, whatever. But I mean, that's just having an adult, especially at that age when they decide not to talk to their parents as much. You know, that is, you want that as a parent. We want
Our youth pastor wasn't allowed into, we have five high schools in our district that wasn't allowed, you know, into them as the youth pastor. But kids would say, you know, my friend David is coming for lunch today. Mm-hmm. You know, anybody can go for lunch. You sign up, you pay, you sit with the kids.
Yeah.
You know, and they loved it.
And we kind of, it's 11:30, so we kind of need to close. But one thought, too, if you're not getting what you want in the schools, ask for it and demand it. In the case, there are public schools and funding is tight. Administrators and teachers are busy and they don't always want to hear these things, but they are our schools. And I'm speaking now as a parent, not as a teacher, that we have to demand excellence and quality in them, and don't be afraid to do that, and please don't be afraid to advocate for your child, because they're going to be better kids for it. So,
I think of your mantra, think of the symbol, the year that we had just hell going on. Every time I walked in that building, I would wear red or black clothes, and I, you know, a power suit. I didn't go in my sweats because I had to confront the teachers on an equal basis. Sometimes you have to play those mind games. Before I would walk in the door, I would say, this is my school. I have a right to be here. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever it is that works for you, if you have lucky earrings or, you know, socks that, you know, never lost a game, you know, whatever it is, don't be afraid to do it. You know, take your courage.
And look for your friends and your advocates within the system as well, because there will be people there that really want to help.
Our principal still advocates for me.
Well, that's
the idea there. And says he expects an invitation to his graduation because he's putting as much effort as anybody else does. You know, and I think that's great. I mean, it's touching to me that he cares that much about my son. Mm-hmm. And starting his junior year, he is still advocating for my child.
That's neat. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you all for coming.